Good morning, everyone. My name is Anne-Marie. I run a business called The Paragraph Challenge. And with me today, I have a fabulous lady called Lucy Cronley. Have I pronounced your name right,
Yeah,
Lucy?
that's right,
Very
Sue.
good. Okay. So Lucy is a professional coach, and she says that she uses creativity and energy to transform her clients' lives. So Lucy, what, maybe introduce yourself first.
Yeah, my name is Lucy Cronley. I'm a life coach. I'm very interested in people being the very best version of themselves. I think when we talk about being full of yourself, I think that's a really important thing to be full of because who else would you be full of? So I
Yeah.
think it's about embracing the being full of yourself and the very
Yep.
best version of that.
I heard you say that recently. I think I was talking to you, and I was saying it to my daughter because she's 21. And like teenagers, it's something that they say a lot, isn't it? Oh, your mom's very full of herself. And when I said it to her, she goes, "Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because not something you actually think about, is it?" And can you tell us a little bit about your background, Lucy, how you came to do what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, well, my background is I worked in residential care for a very long time with teenagers and children and families. And then I had to retire from work after an injury. And I found myself at home thinking, what am I going to do now? I trained as a family therapist, and that didn't really appeal to go back into that field. So I decided to upskill and retrain as a life coach. And I love the idea of life coaching because for me, what life coaching is about, it's about looking at where you are now and where you want to go. It's not about delving back into the past. And absolutely, there's a place for that, delving back into how did I get here? But it's more looking at where do I want to go? What are all the wisdoms I've gained in my life, pulling them all together? Because nobody knows you better than you know yourself. You
This
are
is
the
true.
only person who has heard every single word you've ever said in your whole life. Nobody else has had
Yeah.
that privilege except you. So you know yourself best, but sometimes we get in our way of knowing ourselves and knowing what's right for us. And sometimes we have conversations with ourselves that don't leave us in good places. So I like to help kind of flip that round and say, if you have to listen to yourself all day and you have no choice about listening to yourself, you have to.
Exactly. Yeah, my granny
Then,
had a saying about that. The best something like the best person to talk to is yourself because you can't fall out with yourself. But I think you can kind of fall out with yourself. You
out with yourself.
get very frustrated because I know from I mean most of the students that I work with would come like very frustrated. And they have fallen out with themselves because, like you, they don't believe that they're, capable of achieving what they want to achieve, because of the way that they learn. And I suppose that's what we both work in the same type of area. We both move students forward into showing them what is possible
Exactly. And I
using the
always,
right tools, I suppose.
exactly. But I think it's like, I always said, I can't sing. That's
Yeah.
getting in my own way. Whereas if you add yet to the end of that, I can't sing yet. But if you put
Exactly.
some time and effort in, you'll
I
get there.
know, yeah, because a lot of children mistakenly think that they should know stuff. I know some of my students come to me before they learn it, and you say, but like, as an adult, you realize like it doesn't make any sense. But when kids are sitting and teenagers in a classroom and they feel like they're behind, but they haven't learned it yet, as you say.
Exactly.
There's always time to adapt and to change and to look at things from different perspectives.
It's also about choosing what it is you want to be. There's
Yes, I mean,
no
that's
point
very
in what it
difficult,
is you
isn't
want to
it?
be
When I
first.
was in school and I was a teenager, I was like, was quite a good student, but I never knew what I wanted to do. And so I just plodded along and I did well in school. But I mean, it's a lot of pressure to know what you want to do. Unless somebody like
Because
you,
if
like
you
a
know
life coach
what
said,
you
this is
want
what
to do,
here's all your skills. There's multiple things you can do. Whereas, I mean, I think now there's a lot more opportunity, and it's but sometimes opportunity also creates confusion when you're doing you're
right.
pulling in all different directions.
Absolutely. But I think it's also, the big question of what do you want to do? It's like, do
It's
you think what you
huge.
have to do for the whole rest of your life? it's not that. It's what do you want to do next? And sometimes that actually, I want to make a cup of tea and sit down for 10 minutes. And that's just what you want to do next. And then what you want to do next after that. So when you just start thinking, what do I
Rather
want to do
than,
next?
yeah, it's true. Because I think even most school guidance counselors, like, what do you want to do? They don't use the same phrases that you do. So, like, it's like, do you want to be a pilot or do you want to be a doctor? Do you want to... And it's this huge, big thing that I remember when I was in school going, gosh, yeah, I wouldn't mind being a doctor. But God, no, who wants to spend 9 years doing something? And so, but if you thought of it the way you said, what do you want to do next? Well, maybe I'll try this out, see do I like it, and if I don't like it, I can try something else. And so I think, yeah, I went to college for a few years, but I gave up after 2 years. I was studying science, and I did like the science. I just didn't like the college I was in. But nobody said, well, why don't you just move to a different college? To me, it was the whole, I didn't like college, but I was very young. I was 17, and it was more the environment I didn't enjoy than the actual topic. I still love science. Yeah, so I suppose speaking to somebody like you, I suppose opens up people's minds, doesn't it? And shows them like what's possible, and that you don't have to think about 10 years down the road, because it's not what teenagers want to do, is it? They want to think about the here and now. And I suppose similarly, when you're working with adults in jobs, it's not like, when you go for an interview, what's your 5-year plan? You're not going, what's your 5-year plan? You're going like, well, what do you want to do tomorrow? And I think that's probably much more freeing for people, rather than, because it's quite daunting. Those when I'd go for an interview, I hated interviews when I was a kid, well, I was a kid when I was 17 and 18. But the two questions I hated was, one, what's your 5-year plan? And the other one was, do you have any questions? Because I never think of any questions. And apparently you can't get the job if you don't have any questions.
But it's like, what's your 5-year plan? Well, you can have a 5-year plan that can be, I'm going to be the best I can be, make the best choices I can make as they come along, and
Yeah.
be open to whatever comes
Comes
along.
along, yeah.
And when you, if you take it back to the idea of being a doctor, and you think, oh, well, 9 years, but it's 9 years doing something that you're really committed to, passionate about, to achieve something which is simply a marker along the way. It's
Yeah.
not an end point. Do you know what I mean? So it's the
No,
beginning of a
it's
journey with a marker along the way that takes you into something else. So it's about
sure.
all those stepping stones of things. And sometimes I think like one of the things I often get students or people I work with to do is to, if you think about like a page, like an A4 page, you can get to the top in four big steps, like four big giant steps. Or you can just
Terrific.
take lots of teeny tiny tiny little steps. You're still going to get to the top, so why
Yeah.
look at things in the massive leaps instead of breaking it down
Well,
into the what to do next?
yeah. I mean, that makes so much more sense. And I mean, there is the people who like to do the giant steps because they want to see quick. I mean, I'm a bit of a quick results person, but it's not always. I think when the older you get, the more you realize that, life doesn't have to be, like you said, giant steps that, it's okay to do, and it's okay to divert off the path and, try something else and then come back to it. Or,
But is it diverting off the path or is it making your own path?
well, yeah, you're probably right, it
There
is,
isn't
yeah.
a predetermined path because we all get to actually make our own path. And sometimes you need a shovel to dig a bit of your way through something difficult, or other times there's path there before you.
Yeah.
But either way, it's your own journey. And I think when we each kind of embrace our own journey and our own what we want to be, what we want to do, and we encourage that in young people. Like some young people say, oh, I want to be a pilot. I'm never going to be that. Do you know what I mean? Why
Yeah.
not? The world is full
Of
of people
opportunity. Yeah.
who climb all kinds of hurdles to get somewhere that they want to go. We have rock stars in the world. Why would we say to somebody, you're not going to be that?
Oh, I know, yeah. And that is, I mean, I don't know now because I haven't spoken to them in recent times, but I know that was what career guidance teachers would say. They would look at your academics and they'd look at your assessments and say, oh, look at it. I remember that we did one of those psychological assessments, I think, in 3rd year. And then the career guidance lady looked at it and she goes, no, you should give up art. You're not artistic. I mean after school, I was okay at art. I wasn't an artist, but like it's a nice relaxing thing to do as a hobby. And like I always, when parents come to me, I always say to them, look, don't pick, like a lot of my students would be neurodiverse, either dyslexic, dyspraxic, or somewhere along that line. And I always say, well, pick some subjects that they like that are easy, you know, because like someone will say, oh no, but like they're already doing a musical instrument. Well, then do music. Oh no, but blah blah blah. And I was going, but it doesn't matter if they don't get A, they need something during the day that's going to be relaxing. And the same with if I'd stuck with the art instead of doing geography, which bored me to tears, I would have enjoyed it better. Now, I was very good at geography, but the teacher was very boring for leaving, sir. She sat there just beating the table.
Two things in that, Amory. First of all, there's, you know, the like I would have said to students and that I've worked with, you know, well, if you need geography to get into something that you want to do afterwards, simply think of it as a ticket for the bus. Do you know what I mean? So it's not, the geography doesn't really have to matter to you, but you have to absorb the information to be able to give it back to get something you want. So when you look at it in the bigger picture, you know, it's that idea of sometimes you zoom in and look at the subject. Sometimes you zoom out and look at what it can bring. So you don't have to like geography, but if you have a knack for it and it can get you points or whatever it is that you want, well, then kind of, yeah, you know, so what if we don't like the teacher? We have another few years of them and then I'm off. You
Yeah,
know, so that's
that
a
is
ticket
a
on the
good
bus.
way. Yeah, you're right. That's a good way of looking at it. And I did have a knack for geography. But I was already doing all the science subjects that I liked.
Good
And
enough.
you are right. So I wouldn't have got the points probably in the art, but you know, as you are right, it depends on what point you're trying to get to.
Yeah, and I think that's when you kind of start looking at breaking things down for people as to what is it that you want? What do you need? You know, and how are you going to move this forward? You know, so it's looking at, you know, if there's kind of hard work that's surrounded in study, where do you find your joy? Because we all need joy
We
in our
definitely
life.
do, yeah.
So do you find that in a hobby outside of school? Do you find it in a particular subject, in an instrument that you play, in a youth group that you're in? And then you know you can kind of fill up your bucket of joy in that
In that
area.
area,
You have it slotted into your week. So it means doing the tougher things in the week
yeah, sure.
are easier.
One of my students, who came yesterday, she's only 1st year. And she was asking me, should she do higher level maths or ordinary level maths? And I said, well, it depends what you want to do. And she goes, well, I hear that you have to do 25 minutes of homework a night if you do higher level and only 5 minutes if you do ordinary level. And I was trying not to laugh. I said to her, I don't think that's actually accurate because I said, I can't imagine you get any maths done in 5 minutes, like secondary school level. And she goes, yeah. Now, at the moment, she's struggling a lot in math. So I said to her, it depends on how much work you want to do and whether you think you're going to need it for something else. And she said, well, I don't know what I want to do. And then she goes, if I did the ordinary level, could I change to higher level in 4th year if I worked really hard? And I said, well, I said, that would be a much more difficult idea. And I said, unless schools have changed a lot, I said, most of them will not let you move up to higher level if you've been in ordinary level. All right, okay, I'll think about it. And can you teach me to focus? Now, this is funny because I had to ask her to do a program with me a while ago, and it was during a holiday, though. She said, oh, no, I couldn't do that during my holiday, though. So then her mom said she could take time off, but she still wasn't convinced. But then yesterday, when she said, oh, she'd never asked me before because she was going, I just, no, she's a very hardworking student, very interested in learning. I just can't focus. And I said, well, that's one of the things I can teach you because she was only come for a maths grind, which I told her all along wasn't great, that, you know, she needed more. But anyway, oh, you can teach me to focus. And I was going, yes. And then I said, and relax and control your energy levels. I said, because they're all things that are stopping you from learning. Oh, that actually sounds really good. But I had said the same things to her in October, and she wasn't interested then. But now she's, because it's coming to the end of the year, and she's suddenly thought about it. And yeah, so sometimes you just have to give people time, don't you, for information to sink in.
But that
So.
makes sense as well. I think sometimes it's about the steps of things making sense.
Yeah.
We try sometimes to solve problems for people, then they're not as engaged. Whereas when she realizes herself that it's a problem, and then she can go back and say, actually, do you know something? So it sounds like a new idea nearly, and you're going,
Yeah, I
it's
know
a
a lot of people like that, or
problem.
it has to be their idea. So you just have to wait, and it's like they came up. So a lot about what you've been talking about is like to do with the brain and the way of thinking. And I know that you combine neuroscience. Can you explain to people who might not know what that means, what it is, Lucy?
It's really looking at what happens to us in our body, when you get the kind of fast heart palpitations, like
Sure, yeah.
the idea of, kind of what hormones kick off in our bodies when certain things are happening, what helps us to relax, what helps us to step into a good, powerful space, I think what are all the things that we bring into being to make that happen? Looking at our emotional intelligence and how we manage that, how we connect with other people, and understanding what's happening in us that sometimes gets in the way of that happening, or sometimes allows it to happen. When we make a
Yeah.
bid for connection with another person, so I mean, and it's happened to all of us. You go to somebody and you go, I have something I really need to tell you, but they're busy, caught up in their day, or there's
Yeah.
something happening in another person, and we think, oh, they don't care. They didn't listen to me, so they don't care.
Yeah.
And
We
then we
do,
step
yeah.
away, and we step away and go, well, actually, they don't care. But what we and then we start to spiral into a story of somebody not caring about us, when actually, sometimes what's happened is we haven't created a space for both of us, because there needs to be a space for
Yeah.
both people to have the conversation.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's looking at how we manage the things that kick off in ourselves, like even the idea that, it's the same things that happen when you're very, very nervous about something. It's the same feeling when you're very, very excited about something.
Yeah.
So if you're stepping in to do something that you're nervous about, if you actually say, I'm excited about this, and you tell yourself, I'm actually really excited to do that, what
Yeah.
that does is it just flips the thinking.
Changes the thought process.
Because
Yeah.
the neuroscience and what's happening in your body is the same.
Yeah.
So it's how we start to enable ourselves and to work with our body, work with our brain to know how to manage ourselves and to be our best self.
I was looking at a podcast with Tony Robbins and his wife Sage, and she was talking about the same thing. And they had, like, the way they always have a lot of people online, but they had one guy in, I think, the Netherlands or somewhere, but he had said something like, "My father doesn't understand me." And like you, she just, talked and talked and asked him about the situation and where were they and what were they doing and blah, blah, blah. And then she said, "What if you changed the thought from my dad doesn't understand me to something else?" And after about, I don't know, 15 minutes, she did. She managed to, and he said, "Now, do you feel different?" And he said, "Yeah." And she said, "What would have happened if you'd never had that thought?" And he said, like, his relationship with his dad over the last so many years would have been much different, because every time he had a conversation with his dad, he thought, "My dad doesn't understand me." Yeah, so it's very interesting.
The way of opening a conversation. Because if you start from no point in even talk to this person, they don't understand me,
Yeah.
then it's like, well, nothing, what can come of it then? So it's
No.
like, how can we create the opportunity to have a conversation with each other?
Yeah,
And
absolutely. Yeah, I
that
mean,
has to
look.
be two people have to be involved in making that space. Like for like teenagers, and I remember one young person I was working with, and she said, I'm not talking to my mother anymore. Because everything I tell her, she tells my aunt, who tells my granny, and then the aunt and the granny ring her to have a conversation with her about something that she believed that she'd privately told her mum. And I said to her, but have you set up the conversation with boundaries? So if you have a conversation with your mum and say, I'm having this conversation with you, it's between us, it's not for you to share, it's an in the vault conversation here, unless we decide otherwise. I said, I've never thought of that. She said, I didn't think I could do that. And I said, of course you can do that. Because before you share information, you can set up the parameters of that conversation.
I
And she
know.
went, that makes so much sense. I
It
really
does.
want to talk to my mum. She said, but I don't want it to go anywhere else. And she was kind of going, but my mum has always talked to her sister. She's always talked to her mum. So it was
I
about
know, I'm because
the belonging.
I have three sisters, and my mom passed away, but we would have been like that, like someone would say something, and then you'd be sitting there having a cup of coffee and blah blah blah, blah, and you'd say, oh, did someone. Unless someone specifically said, if someone says to me, don't repeat it or don't tell anyone else, I don't, unless it's something that's obviously critically important. But my youngest daughter always says to me, you're terrible for telling people things, so you're not to tell anyone this. But like that, she's, like you said, she's setting up a boundary, like, don't pass on this information. Because I think when groups of sisters get together and they're chatting and they're just like, you're sharing information unintentionally, and sisters, I suppose, are then are aunts or like trying to be helpful, giving you ringing like to give you advice, and then the person, oh, my granny was a devil for that. She'd ring, and my dad go, and your granny's on the phone. Oh, good God! And she'd be ringing up to tell me about great jobs in the civil service, and every day the phone would ring, and she'd have the newspaper out to tell me. I don't want a job in the civil service, but I didn't want to offend her, so I never said anything. My dad thought is hilarious because it was his mother. So I do understand that
When
when.
you think about that conversation and you think about you took the phone call every day from your granny because there's a good intent.
Yeah, exactly.
When you see the good intent, but when you know that's not what you want, you have the conversation differently. So again, you can set up the boundary to say, my granny's ringing with good intention. It's not really information that I need, but I value the fact that she thinks of me every day.
Exactly, yeah.
So you
So,
can
no, I
reframe it.
mean, yeah. And I knew she was just being kind. And I mean, I'd get off the phone and I wouldn't be giving out or anything, but it's just like I'd be going, God, here she is again. Like, oh, yeah, here she is with her helpful advice. But like, I mean, she was well intentioned and I was looking for a job. So there wasn't any harm in it. I knew that myself. But other people, yeah, would get really irritated. Yeah, I'm more of a go with the flow person. Well, I try to be most of the time. That can get you into trouble as well, Lucy, though.
Well, that
And
can,
you don't have enough boundaries. You take on too. So, how have you found that that happens to people like me, where you don't have boundaries, and then you can get really sucked into a lot of things with a lot of people, can't you?
yeah. Well, I think, have you come across Brené Brown's idea of boundaries?
Yeah.
So it's big. She says it's living big, BIG. So
Yeah.
it's how can I be in my integrity and
Yeah.
be as generous as I can about you?
Yeah.
So it's how do, the first part of it is how can you be in your integrity? So when you step into something, it's how can you be in your integrity and be as generous as you can about the other person in the conversation and in what's happening. But when you look at being in your integrity, it's how are you true to yourself? How are you look at when you think about, do you say no now or do you say a resentful yes? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
We've all
yeah.
done the resentful yes, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
So
But I mean, I'll help people a lot, but unlike some other people in my family, I don't take on their problems, if you know what I mean. So I will listen, but then once I'm doing something else, I'm doing something else. So my husband says I'm very good at car compartmentalizing things. So okay, that's there, and it's not going to, I'm not going to absorb that into my identity and get depressed because they have a problem, because there's nothing I can do about their problem. So I am
If
very.
you were to take on their problem, what use is that? It's like the idea of having empathy for somebody, because when you have empathy for somebody who's in a situation, then you can actually have conversations with them that may shift them out of it. If you have sympathy for somebody, well, then you're kind of sitting down in their in the misery with them
With
and
them,
feeling sorry for them. So when you're feeling sorry for somebody, you don't gift them anything, except pity. And that puts people sometimes in a tougher situation. So it's like when you can have the boundaries, as you were saying, know where your limits are, know what you can do, and kind of know what's important, it can help them to just have a conversation, shift things around themselves, because sometimes they're just simply saying something out loud to
They
somebody
are,
else.
I know. I saw because
You
I
hear the word.
literally sometimes I do that myself, and then my husband would say something, and I was going, I wasn't asking for your opinion, I'm just telling you something. And like you said, it's sometimes just gets to pay to your head, isn't it? That, and once it's you've said it, and because I think things sound very different when you verbalize them than they do internally, don't they?
Sometimes they sound stone mad when you say them out loud, don't they? You're going, oh my God, am I actually really having this conversation?
Yeah, my husband will go, what are you talking about? And I go, God, yeah, you're right, that actually doesn't make any sense. And it might not be something important, it might be I'm just trying to think of something and think. And sometimes you just can't get the right words either, especially if you're stressed or something. It's hard. I know that for some of my students, verbalizing their thoughts can be a very difficult thing for a lot of people.
Exactly. So it's how you manage that and what can help to do that. We all have different things, that help us to be drawing a picture, being whatever it is. Like one of the things that I do, and it's funny, we talk about how are you creative. I think when we step into our creative self, that then that can give us time to nearly kind of meditate. Like one of the things I love to do is I love to knit, and I love the rhythmic just of the needles. And I count the stitches, I watch the pattern, and I feel like I'm making something purposeful. And it's very calming and relaxing. And like, there was a time when I would have said, I'm not creative, but we're all creative. But it's how are you creative? That's
I
my
know.
question.
I think
So it's like, are you creative with your words? Are you creative in drawing? Are you creative in making things? Are you creative with, speed on the road? Can you run fast? What are the things that you bring that's new and different to the world? Because everybody has something. It's just to find it.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think you're right. Most people think of creativity in the form of making a picture, something
Van
to do with
Gogh or
art
something
or
like that.
music, but they don't think, like you said, of like being good at a sport or just going for a run or doing their garden. I know when I loved doing creative stuff and I loved arts and crafts, and I used to drive my mother mad with Blue Peter and all that. But and when my kids were small, I loved doing art with them. Like, we had so much art stuff and glitter, and all her friend Joanna's friends would come here because they weren't allowed to use glitter in their own house.
I was banned in my house too.
And it's funny, my daughter's fiance, he can't stand glitter. And it's going to be gone soon anyway, because it's been banned now. But I have my stockpile. But yeah, it's funny because even as a parent, if you're doing something like that with a child, it relaxes you as well as the child, because you're not going, oh, what am I going to do? Oh, it's raining. It distracts you. My mom used to always bake if the weather wasn't good outside, because then you're not looking out the window at the bad weather. You're like focusing, like you are, on your knitting.
You're making something, and when you're making something, and there's something really powerful about being with somebody making something, because it creates a little magic space, doesn't it? It creates a little magic space of conversation, of connection, of have you come across that book? Have you filled a bucket today?
No, I haven't read it. I must get
Yeah,
that.
it's so cool, and it's the idea that we each have a bucket of happiness. That some people that we meet fill the bucket or put happiness into the bucket, and some people that we meet take happiness out of the bucket. And I love that for, kind of people to go through their day with their bucket. So if you're meeting somebody that is not going to add to your bucket of happiness or is going to scoop happiness out, it's we'll put a lid on it, So it's how you manage yourself, with the different relationships that you have in your life. And I always say to people as well, who are the people that simply by you appearing at the door, all you have to do is appear, you'll
And
make them smile.
Yeah.
Think of those people,
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
and find them and seek them out when you're feeling down. Don't seek out the people that are going, nothing wrong with you, just cop yourself on and up you get. And, you know, all those, who are the people that fill your happiness bucket? You
Yeah,
know, and how do you keep them to the fore in your life?
I know, because my mom was very much a person that filled everybody's bucket with happiness, but she also was a little person who took on a lot of people's bad energy sometimes. But like the minute she'd arrive, because like the kids would be absolutely delighted, like here's granny, and you know she filled a lot of people. Even when like if she went shopping, she knew everybody in the shopping center. She knew all about the families, and you know she was a really happy, smiley person. And I remember when I was working, and I used to work in finance before I did this. And like you, I was thinking, why do I always I go into work feeling absolutely great? Because generally, I'm very good at making myself happy. Because if I get up and I'm not feeling great, I'm going, okay, well, I just need to do some exercise, go for a walk, do something, you know, change the thought. And I'd get to work in great humor. And there was one of the girls we worked with before in the office, and I was in charge. But she'd suck the living daylights out of you, if you know what I mean, because she just complained constantly. Like everything was negative. I mean, I gave up the job after a few years, but I mean, I knew the effect she was having on me and kind of the energy, but I didn't know what to do about it. Other than.
You know, the idea of being happy, I'd like to change the language of that. I always think, what can make you happier?
Happier, yeah.
Because happy is a finite, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas you can always be happier
You
than you
can,
are right now.
yeah. Did
You
you
know.
have you read the Dalai Lama's book on happiness?
No,
Oh,
I
you'd like
haven't.
it. It's very, very good. Very good.
Must have.
It's brilliant. I love him anyway, but and there's another good one where there's a guy interviewing him and what's the other guy? No, not the, yeah, Tutu. And the two, because the two of them were great friends, and the book is all about conversations between the two of them, and it's fabulous. But the Dalai Lama talks about you'd never know what it was to be happy if you weren't unhappy sometimes. Like you can't, nobody exists in a state of happiness, and the way he explains it, and then he talks about meditation, and people think you have to sit down, blah blah blah, to meditate, and he said no, he goes for a meditation walk every day. Which makes much more sense. I mean, I do meditate sometimes, but I love to go for a walk in the morning. And sometimes you get great ideas, or you just clear your brain, don't you?
But one person I was working with at one stage was saying to me that they were meditating, but it wasn't bringing happiness. And they really felt that it should because they put huge efforts into it. So I kind of said, well, look, talk me through what's happening here. So it was, well, I get up and I wash my feet and then I do something else and something else and something else. And there was a big ritual and I drink warm water and all this just to meditate. And then I sit and meditate for an hour. And I said, all right, that sounds like, you know, kind of you take quite a lot of time and effort in it. And he said, yeah, but my wife goes mad because like the kind of the kids are getting ready for school and blah. And I'm thinking, you know, how are you still alive if your wife is getting the kids ready for school and you're washing your feet and, you know, doing all these different things
No
to.
wonder it wasn't working.
So I kind of, well, look, let's kind of have a look back at it. So sometimes we get into, you know, what we think meditation is
Yeah.
rather than actually what is meditation for you? What's
Yeah,
your
I
kind of
know.
happy place?
Sometimes it's just like 5 or 10 minutes having a cup of tea, like just relaxing. I know you're right. People think it's the whole, you have to meditate.
It's what calms your brain,
Yeah, what
what
calms your
slows your
brain?
brain down so that you can think more clearly, that you can settle back into your body. You know, what kind of grounds you to the earth? What are those things that kind of settle you back into yourself? Because
Yeah.
we all get into that place where your head's in a spin, you know, you kind of feel like you're not walking on the ground anymore. You know, you're kind of
Yeah.
like
Too
levitating
many
above the
things,
kind of ball
your head's
buzzing.
spinning around. Yeah, I saw a picture of that the other day. Some guy on Instagram or something was talking about, like, if you could see inside my head. Oh no, it wasn't. It was Stephen Bartlett. I love listening to him from Diary of a CEO. And he said, if you opened up my brain and looked into it, he goes, there's just so much stuff constantly whizzing around, 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 around. I love him, but I reckon he's going to burn himself out eventually because he does so much stuff in a very short space of time. But he's 30, so that's okay.
But you know, it's like we can do those kind of things. You know, like recently I was helping out at a fashion show, you know, and we had like everybody showing up all at once and all the tickets coming in and everything. So one of the girls said to me afterwards, "You were so calm, you know, but as you were letting everybody through." I said to her, "I didn't feel calm. You know, I looked like one of those ducks that looks all calm up there." And then it was like in the aftermath, it's what do you do? So we can both step up to those kind of stressful spaces, but there has to be the settling back into yourself space as well. You know,
Absolutely.
so it's stepping into both and knowing what you need.
Because I like when you go on a holiday and then you come back, I don't know about you, but I always feel like a new person and you get like new, fresh ideas. And I mean, when I go away, I read tons of books. I love reading, but I find it much easier to read when I'm out of my own environment. And skiing, I love skiing as well, but it occupies your brain because otherwise it'd fall over. And of all the holidays I've ever gone on, the one that makes me the most refreshed is to ski.
But if you think about skiing, to ski, you need to be fully present in your body, fully present in your environment, and you need to concentrate on what's going on around you and cut out the distractions of things.
That's it,
But that's pure meditation, really, to my mind, isn't it?
I agree. It is absolutely, and that's because the way that I teach and my colleagues teach kids to focus is based on their balance. And like you are talking about, if you can't balance on one foot, if your brain is busy everywhere else, because basically what we're training them is to be kind of similar to a meditative state that your brain is fully focused and in the present, but not concentrating like the teachers go, concentrate, concentrate. And most kids don't even know what the word means. And like, how does concentrating feel? Usually, to most people, it feels like you're getting your head is being pressed and getting a headache and
I
tension,
think we'd like
which.
to take back to the idea of we have this picture of concentration of sitting still, looking intently at something. And my oldest son is on the spectrum. And when he was in school, the teachers were saying he wiggles, squiggles, wiggles, squiggles, you know, can't sit still. He's moving around and jigging and jag. And he was, and the teacher said to me, "But how I check in with him is I ask him a question to see if he's listening." And he realized that he actually was listening. So the squiggling around was
That's
serving
what,
some kind of, it was what he actually needed to regulate himself. So when we got him a wiggle cushion, it meant he could go wiggle around in a confined space,
Right.
which allowed him to listen. And the other part of it was his core muscles weren't very strong. So if he was to actually sit still and concentrate the way we would expect, you know, the classic picture of somebody concentrating, he would have to use all his body energy to concentrate on being still, which would
Learn anything.
take away his ability to listen to what's happening. So allowing his body to move as it needed allowed his brain to be free to listen to what was going on in the room. So sometimes what we think we see
Think
is not
different.
necessarily what's happening. You know,
No.
it's so important to check in with another
Wait.
person, isn't it?
Yeah, the other day I was working with a little boy. He's 7. He's autistic and dyslexic. And we do a lot of push balls and standing one leg. And like he's improved leaps and bounds. But he could only count to 10. So we were trying to get past that. So, you know, I'd written down 11. We made 11 in clay. And then I said to him, "Can you take 11 clay balls out of the box and count them for me?" And he went like this with two hands, grabbed two bunches, went like that, looked at it, put it down, made it into the shape of a robot. And then his dad said, "No, you're supposed to take them out and count them as you did it." But we counted them. There was exactly 11 there. So he knew there was 11 just by going like this and this. So then he moved on to 12. And he did the same thing, put his hand into the box of clay balls. Now, there's 100 clay balls in this box. He grabbed one bunch, grabbed another bunch. There's no way I would have known how many. He looked at it. He threw one on the ground and jumped on it and then put it in the bin. put the others on the table and made them into groups of three. So he made four groups of three, and the dad goes, "Geez, I don't believe it. He's got exactly the right amount again." And I said to the dad, I was fascinated. I said, "It just shows you there's so much going on in his brain that we don't know, and that his brain is just more advanced than ours." And the dad was absolutely delighted because he'd learned something that he didn't even know. He thought because the child couldn't count past 10 that he didn't understand what 11, 12, and all them are. He just couldn't.
Isn't that the idea of wisdom? Like, well, that's one of the things that I, kind of, I do a session on wisdom when I'm coaching. And it's like, wisdom is in every single person, and like when I'm working with younger people, they say to me, "No, I don't have wisdom." And I said, "But you know not to put your hand in the fire, don't you? But that's a wisdom that you've gained. So what else do you know? But and what do you know that's unique to you?" So it's like, unless we kind of embrace the idea that everybody carries a wisdom and sees the world slightly differently, then we get into, you get to a place of wisdom, but it's something different for everybody. And for me, it's like, I will never have the wisdom of what it's like to be a teenager in 2024. You'll never have that. But if we want to know that information, we have to talk to somebody who has that wisdom. So it's like, we have to allow people to embrace their wisdom. What is it you know? The things you know already, how do you see the world?
That's why I love working with young people, but so I employed a guy who's helping with my social media, but like he's 20. And I have a colleague in another country who employed someone else to do it for him. And this person's in their 40s, 50s, I'm not sure, but I listened to him on a call and I said, "But sure, I know more than he does about what works on social media." And I was going, a younger person, even a teenager would do a better job because they understand all the algorithms, they understand what works. And like you said, they have a wisdom in that medium that like we're never going to have unless I sit down for flipping hours on end, which will take me forever. And it moves all that platform so quickly that our brains, I think, are just not as adapted as theirs because they've grown up with it to keep up with that. And that's why I like that guy I told you about, Stephen Bartlett, because he's 30. And so he has a lot more wisdom on a lot of things, even though I've lived a lot longer, because he's lived through a different era. And so I think, you're right. It's important to embrace.
The wisdoms are different.
They are different.
When we, kind of are curious about each other, because that's the most, I think that's the nicest place to be with somebody, is in a place of curiosity. When you're interested in somebody else, how do you see the world? What is it that you think? What's your opinion on? So it's not kind of an antagonistic, kind of right and wrong space.
No.
It's a, how do you see the world? What wisdom can I share with you? What wisdom can you share with me? How can we learn something from each other?
Yeah.
So, and we can all learn something from each other, regardless of age. Like I was just listening to the TED Talk earlier, or it was yesterday actually, I saw it popped up on LinkedIn, and it was, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's talking. There's a little girl in school and she's coloring, and she's not normally kind of too interested in school. She's coloring away, coloring away. And the teacher came over and said to her, "Oh, wow, you're really kind of engaged in the coloring process today. What are you coloring?" She said, "I'm drawing God." Right. So she said, "Have you seen this TED Talk?"
No.
And she said, I'm coloring God." And the teacher said to her, "But you can't be coloring God because nobody knows what God looks like." And she said, "They will in a minute." So it's like kids embrace that, being able to create something and put their own stamp on something. Whereas an adult should say, "We don't really know how this should be done." Whereas kids stay in that lovely creative space. And there's huge wisdom in young children in terms of how they view the world. And we step them out of their creativity sometimes by saying, "This is how it's done."
Yeah, absolutely.
Same with the little guy counting the clay balls. you know,
Yeah.
you take one out at a time. That's how
Yeah,
it
that's why, I
works.
mean, most of the time I try not to interfere, but when there's a parent there and you don't want to be telling the parent to be quiet either, but they do try to sometimes be helpful, you know. I was talking about something actually yesterday on Instagram. I read this survey, oh, a while ago, but it was about NASA had done a study on children to see how their brains developed over time. And at the age of 5, 98% of them were at the genius level. 5 years later, it had dropped to 45. Another 5 years, it dropped to, I think, 20. But by the time they were adults, the genius had been wiped out, and only 1% of the population were then geniuses. So, yeah, I think it's all the interfering, like you said, and putting people into different boxes. And I mean, the guy
This
that
is the
wrote
right way to do things.
the guy that wrote the program that I do, Ron Davis, I mean, when he was diagnosed as a Kaner's baby, which is autistic in the old terms, and he was dyslexic. But they said he was uneducatable, and they used to just leave him looking at the back wall. But then when he was retested as a teenager, because he hadn't access to tradition, you know, he just couldn't access it because he couldn't talk or anything. By the time he was a teenager, though, he was back up at a genius level, and he worked for NASA and everything, because he developed his own way. He realized if he went outside and made things in clay, he could make concepts make sense to him, then he could make words and stuff like that. And so it just shows you the difference if someone's just left to be. I mean, I don't mean ignored and not helped or educated, but I suppose valued.
What I hear you saying is allowing somebody their creative space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think we have to hold that for people. What is your creative space? What is the place that you have a unique insight?
Yeah.
Because lots of people have that. And like if you, I always think of the, you know, kind of like the map of the world, like what we see, everybody sees something different, even if we think we're all in the one place. Depending on where you're standing, which direction you're looking, we all see things completely differently from a completely different angle, you know, on
Yeah.
depending on what's our focus of interest. You know, I remember when my sister and I were driving through Dunleer many years ago, and I'd just got my very first car and she was pregnant. And I said to her, "Oh my God, look." And I pointed out the window and she said, "Oh, I think that's such and such a kind of buggy." And I went, "No, I meant the car." So we were both looking the same direction.
Yeah.
We had a completely different focus on the world.
What your brain is thinking about at the time as
Exactly.
well, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like we all have that different focus. So it's like, can we share those focuses with each other rather than di dictating what's the right or wrong focus? But what's your focus? What's your area of growth? What's your area of interest? You know, what is it that lights you up, that makes you want to engage in things. And I
And it
think
does.
when we find that, it gives people a real sense of self and purpose.
Yeah. And I think it changes over time as well, doesn't it? I mean, when I first started doing this work, I preferred working with younger kids because obviously they're easier to work with. They're not confrontational for the most part. Now, sometimes they're bouncing off the walls, but I mean, if my clients in America talk about cookie cutter clients. So they're like usually like 8 or 9 year olds, girls particularly, who are very happy little girls, you know, and they're doing all right in school, but they're kind of flying along the radar, but they're coping. But they're very easy to help because they're very motivated. But now most of my clients are teenagers, and a lot of them would be ADHD and stuff. And but I think that's because as a parent, my children are now older and you understand teenagers better. When my kids were very small, I was very intimidated by teenagers. And a friend of mine had teenagers, and she'd say, "Oh, but they're great. They're so
They
engaging." Yeah, they
are. I
are.
love teenagers.
I do too, you see. But years ago, you just see them hanging around outside the shops. But now, you know, well, they're just standing there because they've nothing else to do, or they're just having a chat. You know, they're not trying to intimidate people, they're just being themselves. And I mean, I've had a lot of teenagers stay with me over the years because I took students, and they get so much information from them, and they tell you so many things about their lives. And like, I had four interns from Germany here a couple of weeks ago, Like they were just so interested in my work. And I told you about that and I thought it was just particular to them. But it was just I probably had never sat with four teenagers from Ireland, and they hadn't lived in my house apart from my own family, and that's a whole different dynamic. And they wrote us lovely letters when they left about how much they learned and how nice and the Irish culture. And they said that they all would love to live in Ireland because they found that in Ireland everybody chats to you. So when you're standing on the platform, someone would say to them, "Oh, where are you from?" Or, "Do you know what time the train is? Oh, the weather's terrible." And she said, "People in Germany don't make small talk." And in the beginning, she was like, one of the girls, like, "Why are they talking to me?" But after a while, she's gone, "Oh, it makes your day much happier." Like, you
It's
chat.
that gift of curiosity, isn't
Yeah.
it? The
I mean,
gift of somebody interested in you.
yeah. So if you had any tips to give people, what would your, I suppose, two or three top tips for maybe a parent who has a teenager who's ha gone through a difficult time, I suppose.
I think I don't know if you've come across Brainstorm. You come across
You
Dan
told
Siegel's
me,
work around
I haven't watched it
Brainstorm.
yet, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting way of looking at teenagers, what's happening with teenagers. Teenagers are moving away from parent. I mean, if you think about them when they're small, and they just think you're great. And if you say, "I'll go to the recycling center, can I come? Can I come?" And then you get to the teenage stage and they won't go anywhere with you unless you can put it somewhere. And if you think about if they were to remain at that excitable wanting to go to the recycling center with you in their teenage years, how would they shift away to start creating their own life, to try and start creating their own world? Like that's what they're actually doing. And that's a very beautiful space for them to step into. So it's how we allow that happen as parents. And it's nerve-wracking for us as parents because I think all we see is the danger of what life can hold for them, whereas all they see is the magic. So if we kind of think about, kind of a four-cornered room, and we think if we're standing in one corner worrying about all the danger, and if they're in the other corner with all the magic, how do we meet somewhere in the middle? How do we split the ambivalence of those two spaces to actually stay in tune with our teenagers? And the majority of the time, we have to step out of the danger space over into the magic space. We have to make the move as the parent.
Well, because you are the parent, aren't you? I know some people don't realize that. I mean, I was always.
But I think it's the fear of what's going to happen.
It is. When my kids were under 10, before they were teenagers, I was terrified of them being teenagers. I was going, God, I have to protect them from becoming alcoholics, drug addicts. I mean, I didn't actually care about anything else, only those two things. So, but I suppose rather than telling them what to do all the time, my kids were involved in a lot of activity and sports. So then they're in a safe space, but they're not with me, they're with their friends or whatever, and they're not hanging around the streets. So they're less likely to get involved. I mean, it's very difficult as a teenager now because drugs
That's it.
is
And I think
everywhere.
what you're saying as well there, Anne Marie, it's like when they get to that teenage space, they need good adults, but that doesn't necessarily mean parents because they may talk to an aunt or a youth leader or, somebody else besides their parents. And I think as long as they have a good adult that they can link into, that's the more important piece because they come back to us as
Oh,
parents
no,
and they're,
definitely. Yeah, because my youngest daughter was in a gymnastic club and her coach was Russian, and they were all about respect. And I remember when she went to college, she found it very difficult that when a teacher was speaking, that the other kids were just, most of them would be English and other nationalities, they'd be just talking, and she'd gone, but she found it actually quite stressful how bad mannered that they were. And she said, like, no matter how nice, and some of them, then the problem happens is the person teaching the class gets aggravated, and then they become not the best version of themselves either in response to the bad manners, and and then it becomes a cycle. of that teacher's not really nice, but neither are the students.
But it's funny
So.
because, one group of students that I was working with there at one stage were coming in these shoes, right? And I've curiosity. One of my projects at the moment is my shoes project about how we kind of move around in the world.
Sport
There's
career, yeah.
one group of teenagers came in, and their shoes, literally, one of the lads pulled back the shoe, the whole bottom separated from the top of the shoe. I was looking at them going, "How are you wearing these shoes?" And what
Yeah.
they were actually saying to me is the power wielded by these shoes. Now, this wasn't exactly the language they used, but
Yes, I
this
know that, but
came out
that
of the
was
conversation, was that what they did, they were saying by the time they got to school, they had aggravated both parents and about three or four teachers each day by wearing these shoes that were falling apart. And I was saying to them, "Do you wear them outside of school?" No, we don't wear them outside of school, but there's a point of having your shoes as wrecked as they can possibly be because of the power that wields, but then not having them completely fall apart because all their parents had a new pair of shoes at home for when these shoes completely fell apart. So it was like, kind of as they were kind of moving through their day, they had these shoes that they wore to school to create turbulence because
Yeah.
of the power that they felt. Because like he couldn't take off the shoes and make them put on the other ones. So it's funny, the conflicts then, but it was the joy of actually feeling kind of powerful by wearing those shoes that they
Yeah.
had. So how can we allow them to feel their power? Because we need teenagers to be able to feel their power,
Yeah,
their impact
definitely.
on the world, and their ability to negotiate. How do we do that in kind of ways that creates positivity? And how do we allow them like to wear the wrecked shoes,
Yeah.
and not kind of get in the
Because,
way of them?
yeah, because I mean, it's interesting because one of the ways that most schools used to control kids was insisting that they wear black or brown shoes. There was no. Now they've some schools allow runners, but most schools still don't like trainers. But my son used to wear black ones and say they're the black shoes. But the teacher made him take them off one day and gave him a pair from the lost and found, and one had they were too big for him and everything. But you see, that was the I suppose the teacher exerting her power that I'm in charge and you're not. But yeah, I read your project was very interesting. And it's funny, since you start talking about shoes, when I'm out now, I'm looking at people's shoes, and I've since decided I'm not wearing my wrecked runners anymore. They're not even that comfortable. And my husband hates worn out shoes, but to me, they don't bother me as much. And my son would, he always buys expensive shoes, but he wears them till they fall off his feet. And his girlfriend's gone, "You're not coming out with me in them shoes." Because people do look at your shoes and they do judge you based on your shoes. Like you were thinking, what in God's name have they got on their feet? It's falling apart. I mean, my dad would have keeled over.
But it's the funny thing, like I actually asked them, "What's the purpose?" And they were happy to share.
Yeah.
And the joy they felt in the power they were wielding to all around them,
They probably thought it was so entertaining, Lucy.
it did, yeah. And I was just fascinated to listen to them telling the story, So it's kind of looking at, and I mean, it's back to like what I did my project with, which is like how we step into the world, what we step in, how we set ourselves up to
Yeah.
feel good about ourselves. And it's to find ways of helping people to have conversations about those things, And that's kind of the why I set up the project,
Yeah.
looking at, like you can step into a lift with somebody you've never met before in your life and say to them, "I love your shoes," and they'll tell you a story.
I know they do. And because I was in Penny's a while ago, and the girl at the till said to me, "I love your jacket." And I was going, "Oh, thank you." And then she said, I said it was a gift. And she said, "Oh, it's a very nice gift. Where is it from?" And I told her the name of the shop. And she said, "Oh, it must have been a very nice person that bought you that jacket." And I said, "Well, oh, it was my kids." But compared to when I was in Penny's in the UK, God, there was no. But here people do, like, if they like something, they'll say it. I mean, somebody came up to me a few years ago and I had a different jacket on that someone had bought me as a gift as well, and asked me, "Where did I get my jacket?" Because they'd like to buy one. Well, and I suppose that gives you a little glimpse of sunshine as well. That's like someone else is complimenting you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's back to like the, you know, when you say little glimpse of sunshine, it's like sometimes we teach people, you know, to figure out what are their triggers in the day. What are the things that trigger you? But I like to flip that on its head and say, what are your glimmers? What are your glimmers in the day? And how do you kind of poke your finger into the glimmer and kind of make it a bit bigger? You know, so how do you grow the glimmers? Because when you've got lots of glimmers in your day, the triggers don't take up as
No,
much
they
space.
no, I know. And when I
No.
worked in finance, every day at 3 o'clock I'd get a migraine. Every single day. And it used to drive me mad. And my mother used to suffer from migraines, and she used to always get one in the afternoon as well. But I read it's the sequel of The Magic. What's it called? I can't remember the book anyway. And it gives you different things to do every day. My husband bought it for me years ago, and it was, I think it was just before lockdown, and it was lovely sunny. So every day I did things. But one of the things is like reframing. So you're saying to yourself, I don't get headaches. I have not had a headache for about 10 years. Prior to that, I had headaches from the time I was a young teenager because everybody around me, if you know what I mean, complained
Yeah.
about them. And even if I feel one coming on, I just think in my head, I don't get headaches. And I have never, my daughter thinks I'm bonkers because she gets migraines, but
I think you are. There's always that possibility, Anne-Marie.
that possibility. And the funny thing is, I changed lots of things. So it's not just the thought I changed. I walk a lot more. I eat different food.
It's finding the glimmers, isn't it? That's a
That's
classic
it.
example. Find the glimmers.
So now I never get headaches. And I like I'm it's actually when anyone says they have a migraine, I always go, well, I used to get them, but I never get headaches anymore. If I even feel a hint of one coming on, I go, I must be ill because I never get headaches. But even I got COVID, I had no headache. Even all during COVID, I'd know. So because I think you can switch off things in your brain, just by thinking about
But it's
it.
how you look after yourself. Do you know what I mean? You know that there's something coming. You look at what are the triggers, what are the things that take me into a better space.
Well, it's true. So if I know a difficult client is coming, I go for a walk first, and the minute they go, I might go for another walk. I mean, my husband say to me, "I'm not a dog, I don't need you to keep walking because I'm sometimes I'm obsessed." But I know that otherwise I'm running around doing too many things, or I mean, the other night, I decided like at midnight I was going to start typing a book, and then my husband's going, "She's absolutely off her head." Anyway.
But it's like I think by creating the glimmer spaces for ourselves, it's like then you can create a space for somebody that you know is going to struggle in that space.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're creating glimmers for yourself, and
Absolutely.
then you're
Your
creating something.
energy, I mean, I noticed that with my youngest child and didn't notice it with the others, but she responded to my energy. So if I was in a bad mood, like if she was a baby, she'd be in a bad mood. If I was really tired, or so would she. And I think it's the same if you're working with clients. You pass on your energy. Anyway, it was great speaking to Lucy. Where can people find you?
Where can people find me? You can find me. I have a website, lucycronleycoaching.com or .ie, and people can reach out to me on that. And I don't have kind of meetings set up on it, but just
All
email
right,
me, lucycronley at gmail.com. You can give me a shout there as well. And if people would like to reach out, and I always think that when you want to know if somebody would be a good fit for you, that if you reach out, I always set up what I call like a chemistry check or a discovery call, whereby we kind of meet just to see, would this work for you? Is this something that you would be interested in?
I mean, I do the same because setting up a meeting when you haven't met the person, they might not be the right person for you. And it might
And I
not
think
be
people need
that.
to interview you to see, are
They
you a
do,
good
yeah.
person?
Absolutely, yeah. See if they like
I
you.
always
See if
encourage
you're if they can get along with you. Okay. So when I post, so it'll be on YouTube and the podcast, and I'll put all your links there, Lucy. So
Oh,
it was great
brilliant.
chatting to you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you too.
Oh, the one thing I forgot to mention, if you're listening to this on podcast, that myself and Lucy will be starting a new podcast in a couple of weeks. And so I'll keep you updated on that.
Super. I
Thanks
look
very
forward
much
to
for
it.
listening. Yeah,
Okay.
you too.
Take care, everyone. Bye, Anne-Marie.